Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Let's Weekend. This episode is for May 20th, 2016. I am your host, Brandon Perkins, host with the most, and with me is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi.
Hey, everybody.
Hello.
So, before we start anything, you may have noticed that there wasn't an episode last week.
Yeah.
Well, there was. It was just for the four of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had this awesome talk about the Overwatch beta, and, you know, we just had a good time, and, well, everything was just fine, and then our audio wizard somehow managed to forget that the thing was not actually recording.
Oh, it told me it was recording. It just didn't write a single byte to the hard drive.
Yeah.
So,
well, anyway, as punishment for his crimes, we're going to make him play the first three levels of Superman 64.
Oh, that's not cool, guys.
With a gun at his head.
Oh, dear. In my defense, it was Friday the 13th, so yeah, that's a thing that happened.
Yeah, and Jason is still dead, so. Okay, well, that being said, we got some stuff to talk about. This week, we're going to be talking about the new Doom and all the things that are good and not good about it. There's going to be some Wizards of the Coast and Magic the Gathering stuff. We're also going to be talking about a movie video game adaptation that, well, let's just say it's not exactly the...
We question the reason why it exists.
Yeah, we're not sure why, it just...
But it does. So.
It exists, and we'll be talking about it.
Yeah.
Also, we will be talking about a new tokusatsu series that's coming out that seems awfully similar to The Expendables. And then, of course, for the last two segments, we'll be talking about we'll be doing the political part of the show, and we'll also be talking about our assholes of the week, which now seem to be a... that's now just a common part of this show. So, with all that, let's begin with what we've been doing this week. Phil, what about you?
Well, I've been playing Doom, but, we'll talk in depth about that a bit later. Apart from that, I've been, going through the Wheel of Time again.
Mm.
Still motoring through the sixth book. Yeah. Enjoying that. It's starting to pick up steam, I guess.
Mm.
As much as a series that goes 14 books can pick up steam. So there's that going on. And then, I started researching photo cartridges because, I think I really need to replace the one that's on this Technics turntable. It's not sounding great. So, yeah, going through trying to figure out what kind of cartridge to get and figuring out that the ones I want are for the mounting type that I have, so yeah, that really limits the kind that I can get. So, lots of fun stuff. But hopefully in a couple of weeks I'll have a turntable that sounds better. That's the one slight hope that I have, and that will, not cost me $400. $40 I'm willing to spend, but not
$400.
Hmm. So, that's pretty much been my week, other than...
All right, well, Pat, how was your weekend, or week, or whatever?
It was a little stressful, but it's in the rear view, so I'm not as affected as I was, shall we say. Been playing some more Magic the Gathering, naturally. Spent a good chunk of the morning putting some new decks together, and Teresa was actually kind of on the receiving end when the muse hit me. I was just pouring all these ideas down on Facebook. So I've been working on this Golgari Eldrazi brew that seems fairly promising. It's almost entirely combo driven, but it runs so fast that I don't think that's going to be an issue. Mm. But more on Magic later. I finally saw Deadpool this afternoon, so
No spoilers.
I no longer get to complain about not having had the chance to see it. Only been a fan since 97.
Yeah. And so, more importantly, Pat actually went and saw a movie.
Well, I didn't go and see a movie. It was right here in my room.
Oh, well, still saw a movie.
Yeah. But no, I enjoyed it. It's probably not the story arc that I would have started with if I were planning this out, but they made it work really well, so.
Yeah. Well, the cool thing about Deadpool is that the way his character is designed, you could pretty much start his story in media res and it wouldn't really matter.
Yeah. But that being said, the ending kind of weirded me out because as somebody who's familiar with the comics, happy ending my ass.
That shouldn't happen.
Just as somebody who knows what's in store for those characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. That's cool. Okay. And also, just quick announcement. Teresa's joined us.
Hey, guys.
Hey Teresa.
Hey.
Awesome. Okay. So we'll let Chris say what he's been doing this weekend, then we'll let Teresa follow. So, Chris, what have you been up to?
Well, I also watched Deadpool.
Yeah.
I got a nice little 75% off thing on Android to grab it from YouTube, so I watched that and really enjoyed it.
Nice.
Definitely really cool to see that movie, especially since Ryan Reynolds has been pushing for that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was just really well done, especially like the way they integrate music into that movie and sort of just play up the musical musical
Reynolds originally wanted it to be a musical.
Yeah. I really like the post-credits scene.
Yeah.
As a huge fan of the movie it's referencing. And I would love to see them eventually get to the point where they do the Deadpool killology that I described in previous episodes. Which is just him killing everybody.
Yeah.
As he's become aware that he's a fictional character. And that would be fun to see. Especially I like the way he makes fun of Colossus for essentially being like the caretaker of the mansion when nobody else is there. I'm still reading Game of Thrones. I'm up to 4% of the way through the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Still liking it a lot. Things have picked up now that the assassination attempt has been foiled and Caitlin is, you know, figuring out what's all going on.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I finished Uncharted 4 earlier today.
Oh, nice.
And that's probably one of the best endings to a series that I've ever seen. They go and do a really good job of just ending it. Whereas most other series, when they sort of do their end of a trilogy or whatever, they leave it just open enough that you could do something else.
Hmm.
Here they're just like, yeah, we're just going to let this go and sort of actually put like a really nice epilogue at the end that lets them just say, hey, these characters, they're done. And had fun doing it.
Yeah.
Just had a lot of fun with that game. Danrev has his review up now. It's 5 out of 5, so
yeah.
He really enjoyed it. And I definitely agree.
Yeah.
Still really liked it as a stealth game. I had a weird little sequence towards the end, one of the last points where you can actually do stealth, where essentially I alerted everybody. managed to get my way to hang off a ledge where they couldn't actually hit me. And meanwhile, they were trying to sort of unalert themselves, but my AI partner kept shooting at them.
Naturally.
So they were just kept alerting the enemies. The enemies were like getting pissed off, come over, Then the AI partner snaps her neck, just kills him. Mm-hmm. I'm just sitting here hanging off the ledge, just watching this AI interaction going on, and just found it hugely entertaining. I think I recorded the whole thing, so I might have to put it up on YouTube at some point.
This AI isn't very I.
I don't know, it was the best AI, because it took care of my problem for me. And the great thing is, like, the AI partner does not actually appear to the enemies. They're completely invisible, technically. I guess until they start shooting.
Yeah.
But basically, it's like this invisible person shooting these enemies and them not being able to actually do anything about it. So it was a really weird kind of bug, but really cool sequence to finish off. But yeah, really good game. And so as you, when you get to the end, you essentially earn all these unlock points that you can spend on the various add-ons and skins and such that it has as extras, and pretty much bought everything I could. Like, I just have, like, some character art and stuff like that, a couple skins left. But they have some really cool stuff, like different visual filters. There's some of, like, a cel-shaded mode, stuff like that. It's really cool. I want to play some more of the single player and just try that stuff out. And a lot of there's a really cool sort of extra modes that are, like, every time it dies, it mirrors the world. So just kind of weird way of screwing around with you, and sort of little ways to change up the experience. But yeah, it's really cool, really well done. And definitely people should be checking that game out. I've also been playing a lot of Severed, which is Drinkbox Studios, their new game for the Vita, which is sort of like a, if you took Infinity Blade, mixed it with Metroid. So it's very much like a first-person dungeon crawling thing where your attacks are all swipe-based. And you're trying to essentially beat up the enemies, fill up this sort of combo meter. When it gets full, as you beat them, they essentially enter this mode where you can sort of lop off their limbs, their extremities, and those things you use specifically to upgrade different stats or abilities for your character. So, and along the way, as you get through the game, different dungeons and such, you get new abilities. Like, I have a new, like, charge shot. So I basically hold down on touchscreen and sort of charges up a shot. And that I can use now as a way to bust through some of these obstacles I've had throughout the map, and sort of opens up these new areas. And it's really well done. It's definitely a lot better than the as a whole, and the pieces sort of seem. Because, you know, everybody talks about Infinity Blade as sort of like a weird punch-out kind of game, touch-based punch-out, but I think this game does a lot better job of sort of making more complex enemies that, and sort of the way that you can face off against essentially four enemies at once and sort of have to sort of spin these plates, keep these plates spinning, trying to get through these fights without losing that much damage, as you can sort of get awareness when enemies are about to attack and all that sort of stuff. And it's a really cool game. I managed to get to the first. It's about this girl who goes into, I guess, this sort of like hell escape, that hell version of the world where her family has been taken. And I found her brother, who unfortunately is not alive. But she, in the process of getting to this world, has sort of lost her arm, her one arm, her right arm, I guess. But she gets this badass sword that you use, and it sort of has this Mexican sort of vibe to the art style and all that. That kind of reminds me of Guacamelee a little bit, but it's almost a little bit more horror-ish to it, because a lot of the enemies are kind of freaky looking. Yeah, it's really cool. And it seems like people are buying that game, doing pretty well, because it was the top-selling Vita game for April, which a lot of people in the comments are quick to say, that doesn't mean it's actually selling well. Well, they're buying more than anybody else for that month, at least. So they took a weird risk to make a Vita exclusive in 2016, especially one that's touch-focused, so that might be a little bit harder to port that to anything else but the mobile platforms.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that game, what happens with that game in the future. And the other game I've been playing is Hitman. They put out their first Elusive Target, which is this weird little special event where they put out a new level. It's not new level, but it's a version of one of the previous levels where there's a specific target you have to go in and kill and get out safely. And if you die in the middle of it, that's it. You only have the one shot at that level. And so this one was killing the Forger in the original Paris level, which I had seen Brad Shoemaker, Giant Bomb, try it, and he fucked up. He got to it, killed a guy, but didn't notice the bodyguard that was also hanging out in that area.
Whoops.
Got killed by him.
Hmm.
So I tried to use that as added knowledge.
Hmm.
Found him in the room. He's just hanging out for a while, then eventually left. And at that point, I was just like, crap, I can't get him. Because he goes up into this other area where it's real high clearance. I should have killed him while I was in the room. Because I eventually died because I tried to kill a guard and take his costume so I could go up. I ended up shooting him in the head. Didn't kill him. So he got back up. I was hiding in a closet. It's like, okay, he's not going to find me in here. I could look at the little crack and see him just point his gun straight at the door. I step out, try to kill him before he kills me, and no, that doesn't happen.
There are many ways to die in this game.
Yeah. I'm so pissed, I immediately switch over to an alternate account, go start up the game, and just go kill him just so I have the satisfaction of doing it. Even though it's not actually on my account, so... Mm. But they got a new one starting up on next weekend, next Friday starting. So I'm looking forward to actually doing it this time. I think it's going to be on the new level that they just put out a few weeks ago.
Hmm.
So yeah, that's it. So how about you, Teresa?
Well, I am going to absolutely die if I don't get to watch Deadpool this weekend.
Well, everybody else has.
You know? And we got it the day that it came out. So, yeah, I think we're going to have to use Dan TDM as a babysitter because, you know, kid can't watch that.
No.
So we'll let him watch all of Dan that he wants, all the Minecraft he wants. And hopefully we'll be able to watch Deadpool. Been rereading through Harry Potter again.
Mm-hmm.
And reading until my eyes won't even focus at night. It's horrible.
Well, you got to read up because the quote-unquote new story is coming out in a couple months.
That will be here. And we just got back from Harry Potter World, so, you know, it's kind of a thing. So I'm reading book 5 right now, and Jacob's listening to audiobook 1 again. It's just kind of like a little mind-blowing going from one to the other in a matter of hours.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's working out. And I got Doom going on the Alienware.
Nice.
Little Alpha is handling it.
How many ghosts did you have to sacrifice for this?
You know, it really wasn't that bad. I had been meaning to put a solid-state drive in that sucker anyway.
So it wasn't ghosts, it was dollars.
Yeah. You know what? I think I ended up getting that for like maybe $88 or something. I got a 480 gig Mushkin drive off of Newegg last week, and it finally got delivered Thursday. And as soon as I got it, man, I was into that machine. I already had a couple of thumb drives ready with recovery drives, fully sanctioned by Alienware. So all my stuff works now. All my drivers installed properly, unlike with my Windows 10 upgrade.
So you got the OS installed on it now?
Oh yeah.
So now it's way faster?
Well, for the gaming, yeah. But for everything else, it's really about the same. So, and for some reason, the internet feels slower on it, and I don't know why, and what I've got going on there.
You can make the OS as fast as possible, but the internet kill everything.
Yeah. Well, and I'm using Chrome, and you guys know that thing is just
It's like, how much memory do you have? It doesn't matter.
So I got through the first part of the campaign on Doom, and that's pretty sweet. I was really enjoying that. So especially after some BS that I heard in real life, and I needed to take out some frustration. So Pat heard about that BS. It was really good to go blow away some stuff, and I love the glory kill. That's just, yeah. Yeah. So it works really well, too, you know, trying to keep your health up. Yeah. But other than that, I've been working on Civ 5 achievements. I want to try to get to 75% achievements done before Civ 6 comes out. And I'm like on day 3 or 4 of this epic, horrible game trying to get the Norwegian ski patrol into a snow tile, which is fine. I could do that. But it won't work if you have quick movement enabled. So I had to go back and, disable that.
Yeah.
It makes the game so slow.
Mm-hmm. I just looked it up. It has 287 achievements.
Yeah, it does.
That's crazy.
It is. And what am I at? I have 171 done.
Yeah. Well, it didn't start with 270 achievements. It's like they kept adding more as they added expansions.
Yeah. And some of them that I have, the ones that have been the hardest to get as far as global achievement stats, they're not the ones that are like, 0.2% of players have gotten it, 0.3% have gotten it. The ones that have been hard for me have been
the really common ones.
Yeah. So, that's what I've been up to. And I have plans to revisit Fantasy Life probably sometime next week. I think my kid finished up his final chapter of that, and then I should catch up, and we're going to buy the expansion pack.
Nice.
Yeah, that game's good.
Yeah, so that's this weekend in a nutshell. Oh, and Mario Kart, I forgot to say that. We've been playing that.
Mm-hmm.
So, fun.
All right. Well then, what have I been doing? Well, first and foremost, I've been playing Doom.
Yeah.
And let me just ask, is it unusual to suddenly have a weird sexual urge towards a game? Because,
I'm pretty sure that's
I'll go a little bit more into detail. If
we were talking food, it wouldn't be that unusual, but
yeah.
You know.
But yeah, so I got that, and we'll talk about this a bit more. But one of the things I love about that game is just how they literally just throw you in the middle of it. But
just like it's 1993.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they took some cues from Brutal Doom as well, because some of those glory kills are awfully awfully similar.
Familiar.
Mm-hmm. But let's see. Other than that, I've been reading some stuff. I've got this new manga that I like reading called Seraph of the End, which is it's written by the same guy who wrote the light novel series Legend of the Legendary Heroes, which is a heroic fantasy novel series. And he also wrote Takaya Kagami, that's his name. He also wrote A Dark Rabbit Has 7 Lives, which is another popular light novel series that was illustrated by Yuka Miya, the creator of No Game, No Life. And basically what it is Have you guys ever heard of that manga or anime franchise, Dance in the Vampire Boond?
Heard of it.
Yeah. The basic idea with Dance in the Vampire Boond is that vampires during sort of the modern age, vampires just kind of emerge out of the shadows and decide that they want to take part in regular civilization, so they want to have their own country and everything. And, you know, the story, it's all about sort of like how everyone's trying to get along with the vampires and everything, and tolerance and love and peace and all that stuff. Yeah, and Seraph at the end, the vampires just straight up come out of the ground and just take over and turn humans into livestock. Just...
not wasting none of any that time. Just...
none of that Edward Twilight bullshit. Just... and it's basically about originally kids and then later young people who join up with this thing called the Demon Extermination Squad, which is sort of like part of this human military outpost that goes out and slays vampires and their ghouls, trying to slowly but surely resist and overthrow the vampires. And it's really awesome. It's also probably one of the most grim universes I've seen in manga. Hmm. At least something out of Jump. Because it's dark, and there's a lot of talk about, you know, the vampires have no problems basically treating humans like livestock because they view humans as destructive and inferior, you know, and, you know, and of course, obviously the humans have a big problem with all that, but there's also like these inner factual battles, and, you know, like there's this, you got to read it. It's amazing. There's like, I think, 10 volumes out so far. So if you go to, I'm pretty sure, if you go to your local bookstore, you can get it. Something else I've been reading is a nonfiction. His book called Spain in Our Hearts. It's by the same guy who wrote another, it's Adam Hochschild. He also wrote, back in 1998, this really gripping and yet really grim book called King Leopold's Ghost. Basically, this book is about, literally, it's about the Spanish Civil War. And specifically, it's about the Abraham Lincoln Brigades, which were the sort of, which were part of the, which was the American segment of the International Brigades during the Civil War. Basically, to make a long story short, back in the 30s, the Spanish Republic was taking a more leftward shift, and the more conservative aspects did not like that. So they, all of the sort of conservative and reactionary elements of Spanish politics got together and decided and tried to start a coup d'etat, and to lead the eventual coup d'etat to overthrow the Republic, they got a guy named General Francisco Franco. If you've ever watched Pan's Labyrinth, you might know some of this stuff. Basically, he ended up being the leader of this group called the Falangi, which were sort of like Spain's little group in the overall fascist movement in Europe. And so they all decided they were going to have they were going to go overthrow the Republic and install a totalitarian regime. And so what happened is that all of the more left-leaning groups all joined up with the Republic, or the quote-unquote loyalist forces. All the conservative reactionaries were the nationalist forces, and they basically all went to war. And you know what happened is that the Soviet Union basically sent out an international call, and all these people from United States, England, Ireland, Scotland, Russia, Italy, France, all went to Spain and tried to, because they figured if they could stop Franco here, they could stop the tide of fascism sweeping over Europe. Unfortunately, they lost. And, you know, eventually Franco ended up becoming dictator of Spain until the late 70s. But it's interesting because the thing is, the Spanish Civil War, a lot of really famous people were over there. People like, you know, Ernest Hemingway, George Orwell, Woody Guthrie. You know, all those guys were involved and went over there and fought in that war. So it's a, if you ever get a chance, it's a great book. It's a very fascinating and very amazing time in history, yet also tragic, that a lot of people don't really know that much about. But, you know, I may talk a little bit about more in my, in a future random factoid, but, as for music, I recently discovered that John Carpenter has a band now.
Okay.
Really? You know who,
yeah, John Carpenter, the film, the filmmaker. Yeah. He has a band now. It's called Lost Themes. They've actually put out two albums. The first one is mostly electronic, sort of ambient, and but the second one, he's actually got a full band with him. So it's still instrumental rock, but it's good stuff. It's not that unusual when you realize that, you know, John Carpenter composes the music for pretty much all of his movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's totally got a band now. And the best part is, the band is basically made up of him, his son, both of whom are on the synths, and the other dudes in the group are Tenacious D's backup band. Yep. Yeah, but yeah, it's called John Carpenter's Lost Themes. You know, go on YouTube, they got some videos up. Take a look at it. Let's see, I'm pretty sure that's about it. So with that, I thought we'd go ahead and start everybody's favorite segment, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, Uncharted 4, of course, came out recently, and me and Chris were playing it and really enjoyed it. Yep. Dan Reb, of course, played it as well. He obviously enjoyed it. Check out his review on smashpad.com. And the thing about Uncharted 4, one of the sort of central plot points of that particular game is specifically, it involves the story of something called Libertalia. Basically, as it's portrayed in the game, basically Libertalia was a idea where Henry Avery, one of the most infamous captains of the Golden Age of piracy, teamed up with a bunch of other pirates and decided to create a hidden pirate utopia on an island out in the middle of the Atlantic. Now, the concept of Libertalia, it's called both, is not a complete fictional creation of the people at Naughty Dog. Obviously, the way that it's founded in the game is almost completely different from what the quote-unquote real Libertalia was. So basically, Libertalia, or the information we know about it, has one source, and it's a book called A General History of the Pirates by Captain Charles Johnson. This particular book is actually the primary source of a lot of information we have for most of the infamous pirates of the Golden Age of piracy. So people like Anne Bonny, Mary Read, Henry Avery, Thomas Two, Black Bart Roberts, Blackbeard, all those guys. A lot of the information we know for them comes from this book. And it's more or less mostly trusted due to the fact that although no one's really been able to find out who Captain Charles Johnson's real identity was, his general accuracy and knowledge of, you know, the speech and, you know, things that happened in the out at sea seem to imply that he obviously has a good enough information of what of his sources. So Libertalia itself is a possibly fictional anarchist pirate colony that was founded in the late 17th century in Madagascar under the leadership of a gentleman named Captain James Mission. Basically, the idea was that as it says in the book, it says these pirates who settled in Libertalia would be vigilant guardians of the people's rights and liberties. They would stand as barriers against the rich and powerful of their day. By waging war on behalf of the oppressed against the oppressors, they would see that justice was equally distributed. Basically, all we know about it, of course, comes from this book. The idea was that it was founded by this guy named James Mission. James Mission was supposedly an ex-priest who, for whatever reason, had problems with the way that the church was operating and decided that he would go out and start his own life. And at some point, supposedly, as the story goes, he met up with one Thomas Two, who, for the record, was an actual person. Thomas Two was actually a privateer who became a pirate, and as far as anyone knows, nobody really knows what happened to him at the end of his life, which is actually a fairly common thing that happens in a lot of pirates in this book, with a few exceptions. But basically, this James Mission and this Thomas Two got together and they decided, you know what? We want to get away from this place. We want to go off and we want to make ourselves a place where free men can be free and where we don't have to deal with all of this, you know, all of this bullshit about, you know, the aristocracy and the government and, you know, business and all this shit, and where everybody's free and equal. So they teamed up with a Dominican priest named Caraccioli, went off to a island off in Madagascar. Nobody really knows where exactly. But they decided we're going to go off and we're going to start this little place. The thing you have to understand is this isn't necessarily unprecedented. After the American Revolution happened, a lot of pirates who fled from England actually set up their own quote-unquote Libertalia off the coast of the U.S., which they called the Republic of Spinsonia. Basically, these individuals, these pirates, and actually this was pretty common attitudes amongst a lot of pirates, were basically against various forms of authoritarian social constructs that existed, things like monarchies, slavery, capital. They practiced a kind of direct democracy where all of the authority was held in the common people to make laws and rules and use citizens of councils with delegates who were supposed to think of themselves as, and this is straight from the book, comrades. They even created a new language for their colony and basically operated under a common economy. Basically, all of the treasure that they would get during their pirating, they would all store in a common treasure house. They're very unusual, though, in that, you know, there have been a couple of sort of quote-unquote pirate republics that existed. If you played Assassin's Creed 4, they talked about the pirate republic with people like Edward Thatch was involved in, and that was actually a thing. That actually existed.
Okay.
So the idea of something like Libertalia actually exists, you know, something like Libertalia had existed a couple times. Whether or not this specific colony actually existed is unknown. but what does make them somewhat unusual is their extreme sort of, for lack of a better word, communist economic viewpoint. Hmm. Most of these other places were sort of based around Enlightenment ideals that were kind of eventually would take root in the U.S. These guys, on the other hand, had an extremely egalitarian view, which may or may not have been, inspired by the fact that, among their members was a current and former priest.
Yeah.
But for all intents and purposes, they were anarchists. They were waging war against states, lawmakers, attacking their ships, sparing their prisoners, and freeing their slaves. They even called themselves liberi instead of pirates, and they lived under a communal city rule, a sort of worker-owned corporation of piracy. They had a shared code of conduct, and they used elected systems of recallable delegates. They even used, and what made them especially different was the fact that, unlike all other pirates, instead of using a black flag, they actually flew a white flag, usually with a Christian cross on it.
Hmm.
What exactly happened to Libertalia, if it ever existed, no one knows. Supposedly it lasted for about 25 years before it just kind of decayed and disappeared. And, but what makes it stand out is just the sheer unusual nature of how it stands out from just all of these, not just pirates, pirate colonies or pirate republics, but pirate culture in general.
Yeah.
Because although pirates tended to be pretty independent, sort of anti-authoritarian types, pirates also tended to be pretty greedy and hedonistic at the same time.
Yeah.
So the idea that, they not only managed to find a pirate colony based on this particular system, but that they also managed to get enough pirates involved in it that they managed to keep the thing running for 25 years, if it actually existed, is pretty incredible.
Yeah, quite the achievement.
Mm-hmm. But like I said, there's doubt on whether or not Libertalia actually existed. Obviously, like I said, the idea of sort of a ideologically driven pirate colony is not unheard of, but its unusual nature makes it a little suspect.
Yeah.
It also doesn't have that, this being the one source, the general history of the pirates, is the only source of where any of this, of any information about this exists, kind of makes it circumspect.
Yeah. Or suspect.
Or suspect, yeah. I am drunk. But, yeah, it's a fascinating concept, and it's sort of meant to show that, pirates were a very diverse breed, and we tend to have these sort of stereotypical views we have of pirates are sometimes, a little off.
Yeah.
For the record, if you ever want to know what happened to the Libertalia in Uncharted 4, just play the game.
Yeah.
It doesn't turn out well.
They even have that book in the game as well.
The General History of the Pirates. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you see that there's a Monkey Island reference in the game?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, so they show like the leaders of
the founders,
the whole colony. Yeah, the founders.
They're made up of famous pirates.
One of them is Guybrush Threepwood.
Yep.
It's this one that they say, "Oh, I don't know that one." Then you see they see part of the name, and it's like GU, and then the rest is all.
And his sigil has a monkey on it.
Yeah.
And you see his dead body.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like Guybrush Threepwood's outfit.
Yep. Just one of some of the many great Easter eggs that game has.
Yeah.
But, that's been this week's episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Cool.
Yeah.
Pirates. Now let's talk about Doom.
Yeah, let's talk about Doom. It's time to talk about Doom. Okay, so before we say anything, I just want to point out, we're kind of going to hammer on this game a little bit, but I just want to point out, I actually really love this game. I have enjoyed it very much. But the game does have some problems.
Yeah.
And so I believe in eating your meat before you eat your pudding, so let's go and do that part first.
Yeah. Okay, so I guess that means I start.
Yep.
Yeah. So after the whole, you know, oh my god, I'm playing a new Doom game feeling wore off, I started to look at the game, you know, a bit more analytically. And there were a couple of things that's really kind of stood out and just kind of irritated me. First off, the structure of the game is kind of boring.
Yeah, it's...
it's go from one place to another, and then you get locked in a room, and then you shoot some demons, and then the door opens up, and then you go to another room, and then you get locked in, and you shoot some more demons. Then you go find a key card, and then you shoot more demons in another locked room. Yeah. And then to break that up, so by the time you've gone through three or four of these locked room encounters, which happens in the very first mission, all of the tension that they were trying to build is gone.
Yep.
So there's that. And then the other problem I have with the game is, for reasons that I don't know why, they decided that having entire sections of the game where you have to do first-person platforming was a great idea. Mm. Why? This is not what I signed up for. Yeah, so there's that. And my other big gripe is the way that they handle monster infighting. It's like, I'm glad that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
It happens so unpredictably in this game that you can't rely on it as a tactic like you could in the original.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, yeah, you can get the monsters to fight, but you know, you'll never know what's going to set them off. Sometimes a single bullet will do it, and sometimes, you know, a Hell Knight will just be sitting there soaking up fireballs, and, like, not bother turning around and just keep focusing on you.
Well, it was probably just scratching an itch on his back.
But yeah, those are my main gripes with the game. They stand out to me because the game does so much really well.
Mm-hmm.
That these other little structural things just kind of stick out like sore thumbs.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, now, enough about the negative shit.
What's that, all the negative?
That's pretty much all it.
Yeah. Okay, now let's talk about the fun stuff. First things first, this game at the very beginning makes a really awesome reference to the Doom comic.
Yeah,
rip and tear.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, back in the day, id put out a Doom comic book that was given away at conventions. It was never put up for sale. It was retarded.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's... 100% retarded.
Yeah.
But it was also amazingly funny in some places. And yeah. One of the things is that, as anybody who plays Doom knows, one of the things that you can do is you can get a... damn it, you can basically get raged, basically.
Yeah.
I think, what do they call it in the...
Berserk mode,
yeah. Mm. And basically what happens is that basically you then basically turn into a one-man killing machine who can basically murder the whole world with his bare fist.
Yeah.
And there's this whole thing in the comic about, you know, rip and tear. You're huge, that means you have huge guts, so I'm going to rip out your guts and...
Yeah.
The idea is that as he goes berserk, he gets increasingly less intelligent. Yeah. So, okay. So then the game starts, and you wake up, and you're on this, what appears to be a sacrificial altar.
Yeah.
And you basically yank yourself out of the chains.
Yeah.
Like, no explanation why you can do that. Just...
And crush a skull at the same time.
And crush a skull at the same time.
Yeah.
And then you pick up your first weapon, which is a pistol, which has unlimited ammo.
Yeah. It's also kind of dumb.
But... Yeah, it's also kind of dumb. But it's the thing is, it gives you a gives you an excuse to try out probably one of this game's defining features.
Hmm.
Glory kills.
Yeah, those are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, those are there is such a visceral pleasure to doing those.
Yeah, it's also necessary too, because you know you get health back by doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I'm in there, I'm fighting these dudes, and I'm like, you know, just, I'm shooting, and I'm like, that was the winner of your discontent, and by winter, I mean my fist, and by your discontent, I mean your nuts.
Yeah. It's, I find it, very oddly reminiscent of, Brutal Doom.
Yeah, I actually think that they took a lot of ideas from Brutal Doom.
Well, as far as I know, the guy who did Brutal Doom is working with id, well, working at id now, so that would make sense if that's
good
actually
hiring
true.
Choice.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, as far as these kills go, I mean, we're basically talking about, you know, just ripping things off and beating things with them.
Yeah.
Ripping off arms and legs.
Yeah. And what I like is that they're very easy to execute.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a thing that really relies on timing too much. You just have to get enough damage on the monsters to turn them orange,
mm-hmm.
and then you can do it pretty much.
Well, technically, they turn blue first. They turn orange when you're close enough to them to do one.
Yeah.
And when you do that, basically, it's everything from just, you know, punching off heads. You know, taking your knee and putting a hole through their stomach. Sometimes you just straight up grab their heads and rip them in half.
Yeah.
I especially like the kicking the heads, just bashing it in with your foot.
And all these glory kills change depending on which direction you're coming at.
Yeah, and if you're airborne.
And, so, also on top of that, there is the... Well, of course, eventually, very earlier on, you get some of the sort of common Doom staples. You get your shotgun, which is, that's fun.
Yeah, they really don't waste any time in giving you that.
Yeah. And you're basically... And the cool thing is that, unlike in the original Dooms, you actually get mods and power-ups for your weapons. So...
These are fun.
Oh, yeah. So the shotgun, for example, it goes from a regular shotgun to firing explosive rounds.
Yeah, to burst fire on
burst
shotgun.
Burst fire. Yeah. Just all kinds of neat shit.
Yeah.
I
particularly like the chain gun with the sentry turrets.
Mm-hmm. And then eventually you get the chainsaw.
Yeah.
And you don't have to hunt for it this time either.
No, you just kind of get it.
Yeah.
The only thing that bothers me about the chainsaw, well, I don't really know if it's really a bad thing, is that it uses fuel now.
Yeah.
So,
well, didn't it use fuel in the original Doom?
Nope.
No, okay.
No, you could spam that thing all you wanted.
Yeah, all day.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, they couldn't make the game too easy.
Yeah. I think it did use fuel in Doom 3, but we shall not speak of Doom 3.
And the chainsaw is, it's so much fun. Granted, the fuel for it can be scarce, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
It's just worth it to watch just the astonishing violence of seeing this thing rip through demons.
Yeah.
It seems a little ridiculous the fuel would be scarce when the whole premise is that you're in this factory that is mining a fuel source.
Yeah.
From a rift.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Okay.
So, yeah, there's that. Also, I don't know if you noticed this. Did you notice that one of the... when you first leave the base and go out into the Martian surface, did you notice that one of the platforms is a giant companion cube?
Yes. I did.
Oh, weird. and of course, you know, you can pick up Doom Guy bobbleheads.
Yeah.
So there's also that. The way they actually handled the story in this game.
Yeah, the story is dumb.
Yeah.
I don't think there's really any... And it's so dumb, your main character doesn't want to be bothered with it.
Yeah.
Like, pet rabbit head on a stick dumb?
Yeah, like that. It's like so dumb that your character will get objectives and then he'll just smash the terminal that he got the objectives from.
Yeah.
Just because I just want to shoot demons in the face.
Yeah.
That's taking self-deprecation to a whole new level.
Yeah. That's pretty much a reference to John Carmack's philosophy of game design.
Yeah.
Which is that, a story in game is like a story in porn. It's a nice feature, but in the end, it's not really what you're there for.
Right.
Really, my one gripe right now is that there's not a button yet where I can rip off their heads and then shit down their necks.
No, that'd be another game, though.
Well, I'm sure it's coming either as a mod or as an official edition.
Yeah. Well, that's another thing about mods in this game. The only real mods you're going to see are the stuff that comes out with Snap Map. And yeah, I think... did you play at all with this, Brandon?
I didn't do any of the multiplayer, so...
Okay, well, I didn't bother with the multiplayer so much. I played a couple of matches, and it's multiplayer. Yay. But the map editor is... It's kind of cool, but it's kind of limited also.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically, you have these pre-made blocks, and you snap them together, and then you go into a 3D mode, and you place your objects, you place your monsters, and all that stuff. You can set up the AI of the monsters or what triggers them. Yeah, it's kind of neat, but that's going to be the extent of the modding for this game because it's using it doesn't plan on putting out any official mod tools, and it's using that Deruvo DRM, which basically means the entire structure of the game is encrypted. So
that's very un-id of them.
Very much.
Well, that's probably a Bethesda thing.
Yeah.
Because don't keep in mind, Bethesda actually owns id right now. So.
Yeah,
they want to say Snap Map is your tool for modding.
Yeah, it's not that great. It's functional. I mean, you can do some stuff with it, but you got like, what, three or four different themes that you can use. And
I think somebody made like a keyboard or something like that in there already. Like a musical keyboard.
Yeah. Well, you can do stuff like that pretty
easily. It's like shooting galleries and other stuff like that.
The logic chains, it's pretty powerful as far as for that goes, but you're basically stuck with the same assets.
No.
Okay, well, so no neck shitting.
Yeah, unfortunately.
At least not for now.
Yeah.
Then again, the internet is crafty enough, so...
Yeah.
Make a level in the shape of a neck and have somehow shit in it.
Yeah, so other than the problems we have with Doom that Phil mentioned, this game is definitely worth playing.
Yeah, it's miles ahead of Doom 3. I mean,
yeah, just we talked a bit about how it's basically go to a room, get locked in, kill monsters, leave room, go to another room, get locked in, kill monsters, and that would be bad if it weren't for the fact that killing the monsters are so damn fun.
Yeah. I should mention Mick Gordon's soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. The music for this game's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not so much music as just a mass of amazing discordant noise.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome.
Massive discordant noise, occasionally peppered with industrial metal.
Yeah.
Yeah. No Trent Reznor, unfortunately, but...
It's not far off.
Nope. Yeah, maybe when they make another Quake, they'll get Trent back in.
Yeah.
We can hope.
Yeah. I'm hoping that this does well enough, and I think it's been getting good enough reviews, and people are buying it like crazy, that we'll maybe see expansions that will kind of smooth out those edges that that we have issues with. So.
Well, you always have to remember that even back in the original Doom, they were still adding stuff to it, so...
Yeah.
expansions are not exactly unusual when it comes to Doom. So,
yeah, they already got a season pass.
Yeah, which will apparently add some single player stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll have to wait and see on that. So yeah, we like it. It's not the be-all, end-all game that we were hoping, but it certainly could have turned out a lot worse than it did.
Yeah.
Well, proves that this version of id, is not a lost cause after all.
Nope.
Also, you know, let's keep in mind, we're going to go up against the original Doom, and the original Doom is exceptional.
Yeah.
So... with that, Doom already had this new Doom already had some heavy shoes to fill, so it did pretty well.
Yeah, it's
compared
definitely worth
to its predecessor.
Yeah,
I would say, given the landscape of the first-person shooter genre, a legitimate Doom title is exactly what we need.
Yeah, because guess what? There is no cover fire.
Well, there might have been in the previous version of Doom.
There is no reloading.
Yeah.
There is no regenerating health.
Yeah. And there's also no air supply to worry about either. So.
Nope.
Yeah.
Seems like we're getting to the point where companies that are making new first-person shooters are realizing that there's actually a market out there for people to make games that are not just Call of Duty clones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or trying to recreate Half-Life.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was like everything from 2005 to like 2010.
It's Doom 3.
Either Call of Duty 4 or Half-Life.
Yeah.
That's literally what Doom 3 was. They were trying to do Doom, but with Half-Life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's, Half-Life and Half-Life 2 are both great games. They were both pretty exceptional for their time, and you know, they basically defined a whole generation of first-person shooters, but
they belong in their own compartments.
Yeah, that doesn't work with Doom.
No.
You know, that's just not what Doom is about.
Yeah.
Doom has always been about pure visceral action.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still crazy to think that like one of the first major first-person shooters has been brought back and like reinvigorated this whole genre again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because look at this now. We got this. We got Overwatch coming out next week. We got all these, you know, these shooters where, you know, we had Wolfenstein, The New Order.
Yeah.
All these games with these sort of older mechanics that we thought had pretty much disappeared with Halo.
Yeah.
Turns
out there's still a market for them, so.
Yeah. But, so, with that, we'll move on real quick to PSN flash sale.
Yeah. Defense Grid 2, $3. Go buy it. That's
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Thief, $4.50. Don't buy it.
Riptide GP2, buy it.
Yeah, a lot of these games are $5 or less, which prompted me to call it the $5 footlong sale. Yeah, there's lots of good stuff here. Grim Fandango Remastered, $4.49. Hitman Go, $3.19.
Transistor, $4.99. Go buy it.
Yeah.
The Jackbox Party Pack games are $5 each.
Hmm.
Those are definitely good ones. Banner Saga's $5.
Oh, crap. They got Borderlands.
Yep, 1 and 2.
Mm.
Killzone, Shadowfall, Outlast.
You can get Duke Nukem Forever for $4. Celebrate classic first-person shooter gameplay that nobody wants.
Yeah.
See,
Terraria.
I have Duke Nukem Forever, and... Yeah, I have Duke Nukem Forever.
And that's as far as that's going, huh?
Yeah.
There's Okami HD, $4.89. That's a really good game.
Zombie with an eye.
Yeah.
Bully.
Oh, PS4 version's probably better at this point. Yeah. The crazy thing about Okami is it's a game that's rendered in 4K, but downscaled to 1080p.
Yeah.
So that's weirdly the first 4K game on a console.
Hmm. Yeah.
Super Mega Baseball for $5. If you like the sort of classic, like NES-style baseball games, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Don't Starve, Giant Edition, Console Edition, that stuff's really good, $4.49. Let's see, Rogue Legacy, there you go, this is a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
2K decides to troll every Vita owner with NBA 2K13 for the PSP for $5. It's like, hey, we didn't make a game for your new handheld, so here's...
Not cool, guys.
Persona 3 Portables, $5. Hmm. There's a good game to get for your Vita. You ready for Persona 5's release in a few months, hopefully?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff here.
They also got movie rentals, too. So, yeah. Let's see. They got the Hitman movie.
Yeah.
Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, Extended Edition.
Eh.
Maze Runner. Home Invasion. Eh, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
It's about the games.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so if any of that stuff sounds like you're liking, go ahead and take advantage of it.
I Am Bread, $4.54. That's a stupid game.
Yeah.
And a piece of bread.
Yeah.
And yet somehow it just compels you to finish it.
Yeah. I must find that toaster. That's just, I must.
This is I Am Now Bread. This is my sole reason for living.
You can even unlock different forms, like a bagel. It's really, really
it's the kind of weird we really need more of.
Yeah, those are the Surgeon Simulator guys, so that's how stupid it is.
That's one of those games you would have expected to come out of, like, Japan in the PlayStation 1 era.
Yeah, it comes out of UK.
Yeah, it comes out of the UK, but, like, you guys remember that game Mr. Mosquito?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I Am Bread reminds me of.
I think it was called
That's actually a really good comparison.
Yeah.
It's just a really silly, stupid concept that somehow...
It's just focused on this one little concept.
Yeah.
It's like, what it would be if you were a mosquito?
Who likes tits? On teenage girls.
Yeah,
because that totally happens in that game.
It does. Yeah.
Because it's Japan.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, hey, this girl's getting in a bathtub.
And she's almost completely exposed.
I just thought it was hilarious how they took that part of the game and aired an entire segment about it on G4 back in the day. No fucks given, just here it is.
Yeah. Because, see, here's the thing. The way that this game, that Mr. Mosquito worked, was that you had these specific areas on the I think it was the Yamada family.
Yeah.
And you basically had to get there and then drain blood from them.
Yep.
Basically, during that particular level, you basically had to land on her right boob.
Yeah.
And drain blood from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Japan.
Because Japan.
And that's exactly where everybody wants to be bitten by a mosquito.
Well, nobody wants to be bitten by a mosquito.
They always find the right spots, like your ankle.
Mm-hmm.
The back of your knee.
Now you understand why she's so, you know, so dedicated to killing you with the shower head.
Ooh,
the vibrating shower head, I might add.
Yeah.
Those things only have one purpose.
Yeah.
It's for cleaning the shower.
And by shower, we mean vagina.
Well, it was subtle until now.
I don't believe in subtle.
It's from Georgia. They don't do subtle.
Nah. Well, moving on from that, we got some Wizards of the Coast stuff to talk about. So, Pat, you're off.
Yeah, they. I won't go into the details of what their new announcement system is going to be, but the way they rolled it out resulted in the announcement of 5 new Magic the Gathering products. And 2 major ones in particular, which is, the first one is Kaladesh Block, which we didn't know what the next block was going to be after Shadows over Innistrad yet, but they've announced that the set Kaladesh will be out on September 30th, and it seems to be a very almost steampunkish industrial kind of setting. So, I mean, it seems it fits. That's the plane that the character Chandra Nalar is from. And there were some cards in the Magic Origins set that that pertain to Kaladesh. But now we're actually going to get to see that setting in particular. And then the second set in the block is going to be called Aether Revolt. And that will be on January 20th. And so that will be the next block to come along. And when Kaladesh comes out at the end of September, it will phase Dragons of Tarkir and Magic Origins out of Standard, which I will miss. The second of the really major products is Commander 2016. And the big takeaway from that announcement is that they are going to be rolling out four color commanders to play. And so that will be really interesting to see. And then there, not among the five products that they were talking about, there was also, or the other three were a Plane Chase anthology, a new dual decks, Nissa Ravain versus Obnixilus, and forget what the third or the last one was. Let me just jump over to the site real quick. But in addition to the major the five new products that they were talking about. Oh yeah, Conspiracy Take the Crown is the fifth one. So it's a set that's geared specifically toward drafting. But in addition to that, they're going to be releasing what they call sample decks. And this is going to be groundbreaking because it's the first step that is going to completely remove the buy-in aspect of Magic. They are 30-card sample decks that are built around a single Planeswalker and a single rare. And you can just walk into it. Once they roll them out, you'll be able to walk into a card shop and just ask for sample decks for free. Like, they're just going to give... They're deliberately building them in such a way that people who aren't beginners aren't going to have any demand for them, so... they're going to be very basic in structure, and there's not going to be any really powerful tech in them. But
for someone just getting going,
and they're meant to be played against one another.
Yeah,
is the thing, and so that's going to be really good, I think, for the community, just getting people started.
Yeah.
As opposed to the current. What you might call entry-level mechanism, which is buying a $16 starter kit, which are 60-card mid-range decks that also come with two booster packs. $16 for someone who's on the fence is still a little bit steep, so it'll be nice to see what effect these sample decks have on getting people into the game.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't really eliminate the buy-in. It just kind of delays it.
Yeah. Well, it lets people play the game before they buy in.
Yeah.
And I think that will lead to more people getting into it in the long run.
Yeah. So that's one of the hardest things about these collectible card games is, you know, if you have no idea how they play, you know, shelling out the money to get started and then finding out it's not for you. Yeah, kind of a bummer.
And so this would hopefully eliminate that at the point of entry. Yeah. So I'm really interested in seeing how this goes. I think it's a really interesting experiment, if nothing else.
Yeah.
And if it works, it'll really invigorate the community. Yeah. So now it's time to solve another glaring problem with the Magic landscape as it is right now. Something that I've noticed more and more plainly as time goes on is the need for a middle ground format that goes between Standard and Modern. Because there's a problem in that We used to have something called Extended, which was roughly the last 4 years of Magic sets. And as the game has grown, they kind of phased it out and replaced it with something called Modern, which takes everything from the 2003 card redesigns and just packs them into an all-encompassing format with a few card bans to keep things from getting stagnant. The problem is that this has left us with two primary formats, and then there are two that go into the older cards called Legacy and Vintage, but those are kind of on the opposite side of Modern from where Standard is, so they don't fill in, or they don't help with the problem that I'm seeing at all, and that's the fact Standard, ever since they kind of retooled the rotations, has only included cards from the past 15 to 18 months, depending on which block or which set of a block the cards you're using are from. So there's next to no long-term value in terms of from the point you buy a booster pack. And there's product still on the shelves that have already been rotated out of Standard. That's where we've gotten at this point. If you're going in and buying a pack of Cons of Tarkir or Fate Reforged or something, those cards have already rotated out of Standard. And so there's next to no long-term value sort of when you're buying new product. The next set down is Modern, and that's got 13 years of cards in it, some of which they're never going to print again, some of which are absurdly expensive. And so it's got the opposite problem where there's such an abundance of long-term value that it's cost prohibitive. And in order to get the long-term value out of the cards that you've been buying, you have to put a ridiculous amount of money into a format that, if you've only been playing for a couple years, you know, you've never had access to a lot of the stuff that makes Modern decks competitive. There's the Modern Masters sets that they make, but compared to the entire landscape of Modern, they're pretty narrow, and at $8 a pack, it's still kind of cost prohibitive. So what we need to do is roll out not one, but two new formats. And this would really protect your long-term investment without making players jump in with both legs and put that money into Modern competitive decks. And I'm calling these the planar formats because each format is tied to the different planes, the different settings that each block takes place on. And so the first one that I'm going to propose is, I'm calling it planar basic. And this would be just combinations of blocks that share a single setting. Say you were doing planar basic Innistrad. As of July, that would include Innistrad, Dark Ascension, Avacyn Restored, the current set, Shadows over Innistrad, and then the next expansion, Eldritch Moon. So that would be a pretty solid format. Planar basic Mirrodin. You've got Mirrodin, Dark Steel, Fifth Dawn, Scars of Mirrodin, Mirrodin Besieged, and New Phyrexia. And so you're taking sets that come from different eras but share the same setting, so you're not exposing them to huge swaths of history in the game, but maybe if you've only been buying cards sporadically over the years, there are some of these planar plain or basic formats that you could really come up with some interesting concepts for. Hmm. And, you know, somebody says they're maybe this week at Friday Night Magic, somebody could be running plain or basic Zendikar. Well, that's awesome. That's Zendikar, World Wake, Rise of the Eldrazi, Battle for Zendikar, and Oath of the Gatewatch. So maybe if someone was playing back during the original Zendikar block and they got back into it recently, they'll have pieces of all the blocks necessary of all the sets necessary to put together a good plain or basic deck for Zendikar. Hmm. So that's one offering. Another one would be a little more sweeping, depending on how the cycle is going, and that, I'm calling that planar standard. And this is probably the most natural successor you're going to find to extended, with Magic having grown the way it has in the last 10 years in particular. This would be all of the sets that comprise the current standard, including past blocks set on those same planes. So, as of right now, this would add 8 full past sets to the current standard, because every plane in the current standard is, or every block in the current standard is a revisitation. There's the revisitation of Tarkir, the revisitation of Zendikar, and the revisitation of Innistrad. Hmm. This would add 8 full past sets to the current standard. You'd be taking the current standard, which is Dragons of Tarkir, Magic Origins, Battle for Zendikar, Oath of the Gatewatch, Shadows over Innistrad, and soon Eldritch Moon. That's 6 sets right there. You'd be adding 8 to that, so you'd be adding Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, Zendikar, World Wake, Rise of the Eldrazi, Innistrad, Dark Ascension, and Avacyn Restored. So that would be a pretty robust addition to the current standard, and all of those are reasonably recent blocks. So, again, it's not so overpoweringly sweeping that that people would have to go back and buy a whole mess of, you know, $200 cards in order to get competitive.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they were to enact that right now, the main gripes I would probably imagine from people would include the return of Siege Rhino Tech that just rotated out with Shadows over Innistrad. Hmm. And more troublingly, Liliana of the Veil, which is a currently $85 planeswalker that would make a huge impact on the format, I believe. But
a cool card at that.
But it's, I don't see those as a problem. I see them as context.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it would just be really interesting to see what players would cook up based on that context. And then another interesting thing about going planar standard with the current rotation is that it would be bringing back the real Eldrazi cards, as opposed to the kind of watered-down Eldrazis we got with the Battle for Zendikar and Oath of the Gatewatch.
Hmm.
So that would be really interesting to see.
Yeah. And it wouldn't cost Wizards pretty much anything to do it. It's just a rule change.
Yep. It would just literally be the introduction of 2 new formats.
Hmm.
And card shops could adopt them for weekly events, and it would be really interesting to see just the experimental decks that people come up with.
Yeah.
For both of those formats, and it's something I would really love to see take off.
Yeah, would also help move older inventory too.
It really would. Hmm. And if Wizards of the Coast adopted it and really took it into account when they make new sets, it would probably improve the chances of getting some really cool cards reprinted. So there's that as well. Hopefully this is something that can gain some traction, but we definitely need some kind of, we need some middle ground formats between standard and modern, because there's just so much real estate between those two. So much.
It's like a big gap. That's
A big gap made of $100 bills. And hopefully we can close it up somehow by adopting stuff like that.
So
I just have to get that out of my system.
You just fixed magic.
Yep, basically.
I sure hope so.
They should be paying you for this yet. Well, moving on from that. So recently there's been a bunch of new video game adaptations made into movies. So, you know, we had the Ratchet and Clank movie, which was okay and kind of fell flat on its face. We got the Sly Cooper one coming up.
The Angry Birds one.
The Angry Birds came out, and although critics hated it, it's doing okay as far as financially. So probably will be a sequel at some point. And
Angry Birds, Star Wars.
Star Wars. But there are some games where you're not really sure how they can actually adapt it into film. Like Tetris, for example.
Well, we're going to find out how that's going to adapt, because they're apparently so confident in it that they're signing it up for a three-movie trilogy.
That they are jinxing themselves. What there goes my idea. Are they thinking?
Yeah. Plus,
and if it's not going to happen, I might as well just go all the way and say a trilogy's not going to happen.
Yeah, and it's also they're giving this thing an $80 million budget.
Tetris: Legend of the T-Spin.
See, I could picture something kind of like something in the vein of The Wizard. But that would have to be a one-off. You can't really do a trilogy like that.
No, no. You get old pretty quickly.
Like a Rocky Tetris version.
But the thing is, like, okay, and just for the record, this movie is not about Alexei Pajitnov and how the Tetris series came to existence, which, for the record, would make a pretty cool movie.
Yeah.
But again, not a trilogy.
No.
Yeah. No, this is, in fact, entirely coming from the game. What little there is.
Yeah.
Are you going to be, like, packing a U-Haul and you needed a 24-foot, but they only had a 16-foot? Is that what this is? I don't understand what this is.
I don't know, but they're...
You are so right.
They're tossing around the phrase epic sci-fi thriller.
So Battleship, basically. Suck.
It's like, I don't know.
I just keep thinking whatever they come up with is going to end up like Battleship.
Yeah.
Which.
We didn't need Battleship as a movie. That's just, you know. You could have made a movie called Battleship and not based it on the game, and probably would have been more successful.
I don't know. We needed it as a culture. Need to prove there was a floor to this whole thing.
Well, I think we're probably going to bust through that floor again with this one.
Yeah. And for those of you who are thinking, well, they did the Lego movie and that came out well. Well, you forget that they had the Telltale games to as a blueprint.
Yeah.
So, you know, they had some good stuff already in the wings for that. Now, granted, they also had a couple of exceptional writers on the project.
Yeah.
Which managed to turn out something amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again,
this is going to require more than good writers. This is going to this is going to require drugs that I don't even think have been invented yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I mean
you could do it as like a drug trip movie, because like you guys have played Tetris enough that you've like played it on the walls and in your sleep and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Maybe like that, like a drug trip
movie. Go the Fear and Loathing route.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, because we had they've tried to put a story into Tetris before. Remember Tetris Worlds?
No, that's not.
Yeah, with the sentient Tetrominos.
Yeah, can we not? Would,
yeah, that was just a thing. Yeah.
This is gonna suck.
I don't have high hopes.
I'm still trying to wrap my head around what kind of plot, because, I mean, oh god, I remember. Do you remember the Tetris-themed episode from Captain N?
Oh god.
Yeah, that was bad.
The show in general, but that episode in particular.
Yeah.
Just let that sink in a little bit.
I don't think I needed any help making my point.
Okay.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around, like, okay, because, I mean, Tetris is one of those games where the beauty of it is its simplicity.
Hmm.
You know, it's... because of its nature, it's so addictive, and you can play it for hours on end and not realize it.
And it doesn't lend itself to a story.
Yeah, no.
At all.
Yeah. We don't need a goddamn story to put together a jigsaw puzzle. Yeah. Why would we need one for Tetris?
Yeah, I just don't know. I guess Alexei will probably need some money, I guess.
I mean, are we going to just base around the story around how the world is in chaos because of a, you know, desperate need for long pieces?
Oh, you know that scene's coming.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Or maybe it's like an Ender's Game type thing where you got this kid who's like really super good at Tetris, and then he finds out that he's actually manipulating the fabric of space and time.
Yep.
I just said that, and I don't want to watch that.
No.
No.
Yeah. First hour, oh, this game is fun. Second hour, oh god, I committed genocide.
Like, this whole thing seems to be coming from that Uwe Boll mentality of the gamers are just supposed to be grateful that there's movies coming loosely based on what they're playing.
Yeah.
But
I think the Tetris company had to sign off on this, which is what's really sad.
People signed off on Uwe Boll's bullshit.
Yeah.
I mean, we could do the version of The Wizard where it's Steve Wozniak playing Tetris. He's apparently so good that he's been banned from playing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was bad from posting scores on the Nintendo Power, because
I remember that.
Now, for the record, like I said earlier, if this was a game about how Tetris came into existence, specifically about
a documentary, Tetris, would be fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah,
or even just a biopic,
yeah,
would be fine, because the story of how, you know, that game came into existence. Not just how Alexei Pajitnov came up with the idea, but also how that game made its way out into the outside world.
Yeah. It was literally pirated its way out.
Yeah, there was an episode of Icons, I think it was.
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Covered that.
Find it.
There actually is a documentary about how Tetris was created.
Yeah.
And yeah, they interview Pajitnov, they interview some of his old colleagues in the Soviet Union, well, former Soviet Union in Moscow. They talk to the guy who was with Nintendo, who was in charge of getting the rights.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty funny story in and of itself, because this guy was apparently stupid enough about forgetting that. You know, being an American trying to get into the Soviet Union is not exactly something you're supposed to do easily.
Nope. Yeah, and there was like a rights snafu with him, and then there was another guy
who
apparently had the rights.
I think it was Tengen.
Tengen had it,
because
yeah,
they were involved in just about everything kind of dodgy.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tengen's whole part in the story is pretty scummy. to be honest. They don't come out looking very well.
The whole thing was that they were kind of operating outside of propriety.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about Tengen, well, I think the thing that made the, obviously the Nintendo version, you know, superior was the fact that the Nintendo version had the two-player mode.
Actually, no, it was the Tengen version that had the two-player mode.
All right, I got that backwards.
Yeah. Yeah,
but Nintendo the Nintendo version was, had all those pretty graphics.
Good. Yeah.
All that and weird... music. And music. All that weird Russian Soviet-era graphics and the appearance of all your favorite Nintendo characters at the end.
Yeah. And the Tengen version had dancing Russian people.
Yep.
That was doing the Cossack. The version that the arcade version was based on.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there's a story about how, you know, Pajitov was basically robbed of royalties for like 15 years.
Yep. Yeah. And I think he's doing okay now, though.
Yeah, he's just now managed to break even, so.
Yeah.
And also the fact that he, you know, Tetris is not the only thing he created.
No.
He created
his Hexic. Hexic. Which is awesome.
Hexic. He also did a very criminally underrated game with Microsoft called Pandora's Box.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
So.
Can't play it on anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem.
Unfortunately. Thanks, Microsoft. Dick bags. But...
yeah, it used to be on their MSN games thing, and, like, that's not a thing anymore.
Nope. Yes. So,
even Star's in a game, too.
Hmm. Does it?
Yeah, there's a game that's based on his likeness and, I think, Notch's likeness.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's just a little bit weird.
Yeah, I forget what it is. What it's called,
but
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, there's a Tetris movie. We don't, our brains not comprehend this good. Like,
yeah.
No, nothing that I'm envisioning. I like.
Nope. On the other hand, this next one here, this tokusatsu movie,
that
adaptation of The Expendables. I don't know if it's going to be really an adaptation of.
It's not an adaptation of it so much as it's just taking cast members from past seasons of Power Rangers and doing an Expendables type of movie around it.
Yeah.
I think it shows some promise.
Yeah, they're calling it The Core.
The Order.
The Order. Oh, wait. The Order?
Yeah, it's called The Order.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
There's some things.
There's
with...
some baggage with that name right now.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But yeah, basically it's gonna be people like. First of all, no, this is not a Power Rangers movie. We need to emphasize that.
Oh, that's something else.
Yeah.
But it's got a lot of the old Power Rangers cast.
Yeah. Yep.
You're all grown up now.
Yeah, of course. So I'm seeing the original Red Ranger, the original Black Ranger, who of course was a black guy.
Of course he was.
You won't see the original Yellow Ranger because unfortunately she died in a car accident
about 10 years ago, I think.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Is the Pink Ranger in here?
No. Well, not the original.
Now the original.
Johnny Yong Bosch is there.
Mm. Well, that's not surprising. He's kind of in everything. Yeah. let's see. Who else? I think the other Yellow Ranger is in here.
Yep. Well, many of the subsequent ones are.
Yeah.
And they've also got... they got one of the dudes who did... who played... what was his name? It's the quote-unquote bullies in the leather jackets.
Oh, Bulk.
Mm.
Yep, he's in here.
Mm.
I think he's kind of like the chief
of
the whole operation, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
So let's see. Yeah, this...
they're crowdfunding this on Indiegogo, it looks like.
Mm-hmm. So do they have a complete cast list on here somewhere?
there's one around. I can let me do a little bit of digging here.
Yeah, they just got pictures, and that's kind of hard to figure out who's who.
Yeah.
They're expecting people to recognize them.
Hey, here's this guy 20 years later.
See, is the Green Ranger in here?
Jason Frank? No.
No. A dude with the ponytail.
Yeah, I think he's actually going to be involved in the Power Rangers movie.
Yeah.
There's another one?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there's the one that Lionsgate's working on.
Oh, right.
Like the reboot.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's kind of cool.
That's going to be kind of hard to, you know, the original Power Rangers movie, not that good.
No.
No, but yeah, at least the bar is pretty low for them to top, so.
The sequel is even worse.
Yeah. This, though, it's going after fans of Tokusatsu in general, not just Power Rangers, so they're probably...
Well, everyone on here was on Power Rangers specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
At least the American side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be interested in seeing that kind of a project with the Super Sentai and Kamen Rider casts, though.
Yeah.
And yeah, since there's actually a program over in Japan called Toei Hero Next, which takes the former cast members of Kamen Rider and Super Sentai and puts them in movies that are generally outside of the tokusatsu genre.
Yeah.
They've been pretty interesting.
Mm. Yeah, this is the American side of the cast, not the, you know, random Asian actors flailing about.
Yeah.
Trying,
no stock footage going on here.
No stock footage, no over the top gestures.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're
there's your cast list.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome.
Cool.
All right, let's take a look.
It's probably no coincidence that nobody from Operation Overdrive was invited.
Oh, let's see. So here we got, Austin St. John. That of course was Jason. Walter Jones. That was the original Black Ranger. David Yost. Of course, Karan Ashley. She was the second Yellow Ranger. Johnny Young Bosch, as we already knew, he was the second Black Ranger.
And so many other characters in.
Yeah, some of these are after I stopped.
Yeah.
After I stopped watching Power Rangers. Well, Blake Foster, I know him from Power Rangers Turbo.
Yeah.
Actually grown up now.
Mm-hmm. And David Fielding, a.k.a. Zordon.
It looks like an interesting project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad they're going to the fans for this, because
No way Hollywood would do this.
Yeah. People want it? Well, we'll fund it.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it'll probably fund. So.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I think, by and large, a lot of the people who have... a lot more of the people who have been through the whole Power Rangers thing should have gone on to bigger and better things than just the handful that actually did.
Mm-hmm.
So if this can be kind of a springboard for them, then I see that as a huge positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. So you want to talk about scummy internet practices?
Oh yes, of course. Okay. Mm-hmm. So a while ago, Family Guy, which of course is everybody's favorite animated sitcom that's not The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is from this past week.
Yes. They used a clip from Double Dribble.
Yeah, they were highlighting an exploit that you could use in the game to just make 3-point goals every time.
Yeah. On the game, they put it in the show without permission, I might add.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They'd never asked the Double Dribble people.
Oh, the guy that put it up there.
You know?
And his name then was switched on YouTube with an it one instead of the I.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then Fox turns around, goes to the original video on YouTube, and DMCA'd it.
That's another video. Says this video contains content from Fox, who has blocked it on copyright grounds. Has that weird little face that those videos make now. Yeah.
This is going to go nuclear.
Because that is like 20 kinds of effed up right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is theft.
This is a video from 7 years ago, February 2009.
Yeah.
Somehow YouTube's copyright bots should be able to figure out the timeline of this stuff and figure out this is well before this other thing.
Now, that being said, I don't have any doubt that the copyright bot is partly to blame for this.
Probably.
Oh yeah. Have you seen what Jim Sterling has been doing lately?
Yeah, he puts random clips of video games that would normally get DMCA'd, so they all just fuck up the system and no ads get put on the video.
Yeah, he calls it copyright deadlock.
Because he wants all his videos to be ad-free since he gets sponsored on Patreon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So you can't just do no ads on something.
Yeah. Well, you can, but if somebody claims it, then they can put ads. But if you have enough...
You can't just say, no ads, this is sponsored from an outside source or anything like that.
Yeah. So by doing things like, you know, putting... footage in there from companies that they know he's going to get content ID on, they all just kind of block each other because they all can't monetize it. So nobody does.
Yeah, which conveniently, we've gotten a couple of videos on our channel just recently hit up on content ID stuff.
Yeah.
It's like two we'll in the past few days, so it's like one just right before we started this.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, this Wind Waker HD video stream I did, like, 3 years ago.
Yeah, Nintendo just finally figured out it existed.
Yeah.
Shocking.
All dozens of its hits.
Yeah.
It's important.
And what's messed up is there are, like, literally organizations who pretty much make all of their money DMCAing videos on YouTube.
Essentially, they get all the money for a video. On the DMCA, and it's sort of held in like this weird
limbo
until something happens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you just lost all your money from this video.
Yeah. So once again, we have to ask,
where's the fair use?
WTFU, where's the fair use?
And I guess there's a petition going on takedownabuse.org for this. Yeah. To send,
I hope that one gets
to send letters and signatures and all that to the U.S. Copyright Office about this crap.
Yeah.
And you know Seth MacFarlane's going to have something to say about this.
Well, he's already commented on it. And he says, well, I'm not Fox and I didn't have anything directly involved in this, but he's going to take a look and see what's going on, see if he can get it all fixed up.
Yeah. Because that's just really, really skeezy.
Yeah.
It's just that sad part of YouTube right now where if you're a big, huge conglomerate, you get...
They'll take your word for it.
...preference over everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If we're lucky, maybe this will be the catalyst to something.
Yeah.
To some sort of change that's desperately needed.
Yeah.
And if Seth MacFarlane's getting involved, I mean, he has clout. So,
yeah.
Granted, I may not necessarily like his shows, but the man does have clout, and people listen to him, so.
So,
all right,
we'll
follow
this one.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are into the political end of the show.
Oh, boy.
Viewer discretion advised.
Yeah.
So, A while ago, the state of Nevada had their Democratic Party convention inside of it. Not the actual Democratic Party convention that we know of, that's, you know, the big one, just the one that was specifically in the state.
Right.
Now, I linked to a clip with Cenk Uygur from the Young Turks, where he basically he shows basically what happened. So basically what happened is the convention decided to vote in some new rules. And so, as they were in there, there was already this big sort of tension between the Hillary camp and the Bernie camp.
Right.
Because unlike in the GOP, where Trump basically had been destroying everyone else pretty much from the beginning, even to, the thing with Hillary and Bernie is pretty much down to the wire. I mean, they are really close.
Yeah.
If you take out the superdelegates, that is.
Yeah.
But, so basically what happened was, let's see. Yeah, let's go to the Las Vegas sign, because that's where the real sort of meat of the story is. So, see, first of all, Hillary won the primary in Nevada.
Because?
So when the two got together at their convention, there was a 33-person delegate lead that was enough to sway the division of a dozen delegates who were up for grabs Saturday. Now, the thing was, who was going to win the majority was uncertain going into Saturday, because Sanders was allotted more delegates to the state convention. So let's see. So based on the presidential preferences of convention goers, Clinton won 7 delegates Saturday, while Sanders won 5 between 2 categories of delegates. Each category, at-large delegates and pledged leader and party official delegates, a.k.a. superdelegates, had an odd number of delegates, which means a narrow, and I do mean narrow, Clinton win gave her the delegates an advantage in each category. What that means is, out of the 35 pledged delegates Nevada will send to the Democratic National Convention in Philly this summer, 20 will support Clinton, 15 will support Sanders. Now, several Sanders supporters put together that they called a minority report of 64 Sanders supporters they believe were wrongly denied delegate status. According to state party representatives, 6 of those were eventually allowed as delegates, and the rest were denied delegate status or alternate status because either they or their records could not be located, or they were not registered Democrats by the May 1st deadline. By the way, this is kind of a common theme that's run through this entire primary.
Yep.
However, in Nevada, only 58 Sanders delegates were disqualified en masse.
Mm-hmm.
And how many were disqualified for Hillary Clinton?
Let's see here.
58 versus 8.
Mm-hmm.
So,
seems a little lopsided to me.
You know, you understand that people are upset and they feel that things are not being done fairly. And yeah, things got heated there, but what about the things that happened before that night? Like the shots that were fired into Bernie Sanders' campaign office in Nevada.
Exactly.
In January. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then this apartment complex where his staff lives was broken into and apparently ransacked. There's people are going to complain about what happened a few days ago about chairs that may or may not have been thrown.
And make no mistake, that is exactly what the media is painting this as.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, unquestioningly.
They are once again saying that Bernie Sanders supporters are unhinged and are behaving erratically and violently. And, you know, maybe they are.
And maybe they have a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because...
Eight.
Because during the convention, there was a vote that was set up to adopt a set of temporary convention rules as the permanent rules, with the Sanders people largely opposing them, and the latter, the Clinton people, supporting them in a voice vote at a convention called by, what's her name? Lang?
Yeah, Roberta, whatever her name
Roberta
is.
Roberta Lang.
This I was think it's funny vote. That this is 2016 and we're doing votes by applause meter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, here's the thing. Have any of y'all seen that clip of from the Young Turks I put up?
No, I didn't get to see that.
Yeah, okay. So they actually have some footage from inside the convention as that vote, that quote-unquote voice vote was being done. Hmm. And, well, it's skeezy as all hell. Hmm. Because, okay, so several dozen Sanders supporters flocked to the front of the convention floor room shouting, "This is fixed," and "No confidence" at party officials, yeah, leading the convention after the vote. As for that actual vote, basically what this chick did, Roberta Lang, is... Because here's the thing about voice votes. They're very easy to manipulate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, she said, she got up there and she said, "Okay, all in favor of these making these rules permanent, say aye. All opposed, the no's were clearly a lot stronger." Mm. But she said, "All right, it passes." And then, at the very end, as just the cries of shame and fixed and all that stuff just gets louder and louder, she literally says, "This is the end of the convention," hammers the gavel, throws it away, and runs off stage.
It's like, yeah.
And then... This is...
And then...
And then...
And
it's
then,
not over, Phil.
It's not over. We still got some more. One woman in the front row on the Clinton side of the room and wearing a Clinton t-shirt yelled, "Call the police! Arrest them!" at the crowd of Sanders supporters. Some Sanders supporters had raised concerns over the temporary rules over the past couple of weeks and collected signatures of convention delegates in the last few days to put forward changes to the rules. However, amid the chaos at the front of the room, the supporters said they missed their chance to make a motion and introduce their petitions. And as that voice vote showed, that was probably on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So what the vote revealed was just how deep the divide between the camp Clinton and Sanders supporters runs.
Mm.
So yeah, eventually, yeah, the police were called. And there's photographs of a bunch of police officers, you know, standing guard near the stage. You know,
some of the stuff that's happened to party chair Lane or whatever her name is after this, not cool. I mean, it's not cool. They're sending pictures or posting pictures on the internet of dead animals regarding her. They're posting her home address and where her grandkids go to school. And the headquarters was vandalized with some graffiti or something.
Hmm.
And, you know, that stuff isn't cool. Being upset and, you know, voicing it in a sane manner, that's all right. But yeah, this is just, it's very troubling.
Yeah, especially when, you know, people that try to voice it in a sane manner just... you know, get ignored.
Yeah.
So.
This is what it looks like when democracy breaks down.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Is it too early to start bringing up Chicago 68?
Well, see, the thing about the Chicago 68 riot, you have to remember, is that that was primarily instigated by the police.
Hmm.
Well, at least outside the convention center. Inside the convention center, however... different story.
Yeah.
Yeah, though that, you know, that, in fact, the 68 convention is the reason superdelegates came into existence in the first place.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how much of this is going to perpetuate before the political revolution becomes...
the actual revolution.
Yeah.
Mm. Actually, I'm expecting that to happen in Cleveland, where the Republicans are having their convention.
Stay tuned.
You don't think Philly's going to break down?
Oh, Philly break down over a friggin' cheesesteak.
Hey, that's worth it.
That would
but I am expecting that some sort of... This is... That whoever, whatever this happens at the end of this race, there's going to be some kind of upheaval.
Yeah.
That sounds like an episode of a kid's show where they're trying to figure out the class president.
Yeah.
They're just yelling at each other. Just ridiculous.
So, what's, you know, predictions of what you guys think is going to happen when the Democratic when they have their national convention in Philly?
Well, I think that it's going to depend on how the polls are showing Hillary beating Trump. If he keeps gaining over Hillary in the polls for an actual presidential election, I would certainly hope that the superdelegates will get kind of antsy and say, oh, crap, we can't deal with this, and bring in Sanders as their winner. That's what superdelegates really are for. It doesn't seem fair, but why vote in the most popular candidate if they're surely going to lose the election?
Yeah. Hillary only leads Trump by about 6 points.
Yeah.
Granted, that's still...
Which gets the job done, but it's still very narrow.
And troubling.
And it may not get it done. There's a lot of time between now and November.
Yeah. Also, don't forget the shit that went down in Florida in 2000.
Yeah. Oh, God, let's not.
Yes, that can totally happen again.
I do have an alternate reality kind of prediction. All right, Hillary gets it. Trump gets it. They're going against each other. And it's, if this has all been staged, he's going to do something spectacularly horrible in order to throw it, which would be, I mean, great, you know, to watch.
Entertaining, but doesn't.
But, you know, it also makes a complete mockery of the political system. That's not what we should be doing.
Like, you know, he and...
Oh, is it?
Good question, Phil.
What you're imagining is like him and Hillary have their first big debate.
Oh, no. I'm imagining, particularly, is video surfacing from Jeffrey Epstein's jet, which it would be far more likely to surface with Bill Clinton. The underage sex jet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something just horribly scandalous like that.
Yeah.
I was expecting something more along the lines of, you know, him being them in their first debate and he just straight up Sieg Heils.
Well, that just energized the base.
I mean, Trump does it all the time.
Unfortunately, I think you're right there.
Yeah.
He's got to do something that would outrage, well, I don't know.
And he's been nominated by the NRA.
Yeah, he's actually they got the endorsement of the National Rifle Association.
He would have to say something like, I'm going to come and take all your guns. You think Obama was bad? I'm going to take your guns. And then Hillary would win it.
Yeah. And then I'm going to make you all get gay married to black people.
Well, that wouldn't be so fun for you guys, maybe, but, you know.
So... Yeah, Phil, as our current non-American contributor, as an outsider looking in, what's going through your head right now?
I'm just wondering, what the hell happened? Where did you people go wrong?
Reality television is what went wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, something happened here along the way.
It's all the survivor's fault.
Yeah.
Did you see what I wrote the other day, Chris? I was writing to somebody. I said I blame this all on reality TV and the systematic dumbing down of the American public.
Yeah. I mean, it's all idiocracy. It's all coming to life.
Yes! That was not supposed to be a
dumb. I mean, we had Terry Crews as a president shooting guns.
You know, there's... Yeah. there's also some other things, I would say, is sort of the way our government is structured, perhaps, compared to, say, the government in Canada.
Yeah.
Where in Canada, you have primarily a parliamentary system.
Yeah.
Where you've got a bunch of different parties, you know, unlike in the U.S., where we only have two.
Mm-hmm.
No, granted, we have third parties. But
it would be nice if we had, like, a real third party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we might after this.
Yeah, we may very well get a new
if just
third
one.
Mm-hmm. If just one.
I mean, right now it's like that episode of The Simpsons where the aliens invade and our only options are either the aliens or a third party. And like, go ahead, throw your vote away.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like with Trump, it's that episode of Family Guy where all Lois had to do was get up there and say 9/11 and everyone cheered and voted for her.
Yeah. She just went out there. She said, but that's what Jesus would want. 9/11 was bad.
Yay! Yeah.
He's no more articulate than that.
Yeah, we need nuance to the party system. One or the other, that's it.
Well, here's what I wonder about. Is the GOP establishment so desperate to screw Trump over that they would go so far as decertification?
Well, the thing is, the thing about the GOP you have to understand is that so much of the higher-ups and their wealth and power is so intertwined with the GOP establishment and with the party itself. If they tried to pull any kind of shenanigan like that, at least in mass, it would pretty much they would hurt them more than it would hurt Trump.
And this is bad. How?
Well, it's not. Well, I mean, not, it's for them. It would be.
This is the party of cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Yeah. Remember, these are the. The thing is, what I'm thinking is going to happen is that either a bunch of the people are going to what a lot of people are talking about is that a bunch of a GOP may instead put their endorsements behind the whatever candidate the Libertarian Party puts up.
Yeah.
Which I believe is yeah. So that's pretty much their only alternative. The only other really big alternative they'd have is the Constitution Party, which is this extremely Orwellian theocratic far right political group. Basically Ted Cruz as a political party.
Yeah.
Trump has pretty much he's done something where he has appealed to just the lowest common denominator and done it so well that all of the sort of the power base that the Republican base for so long they've known how sort of scummy and ignorant parts of the Republican base are for a long time. They've just pretended that it wasn't true. But Trump's pretty much proven that, they can't ignore that anymore.
I know, it definitely seems that going forward, this really could be a whole new ball game on both sides or many sides of the aisle. It's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah. There's also one other alternative.
What's that?
French Revolution.
Oh, I was going to say.
That's what I was thinking.
It'll probably happen.
Time to get the guillotines out, folks.
No, I don't doubt that that is coming.
Yeah. You might want to watch what you shave there. You could lose your head.
And it really,
And the thing is, they're really cheap to make.
The only question that I have left is if it's going to happen before or after the election.
How about during?
That's an option. I just I see it as inevitable at this point.
Well, either that or we end up having the American Hitler.
Yeah.
And that's not going to happen.
Despite what you may think is not Trump. It's the guy that's going to come after Trump. And the home of the brave. anyway, moving on. We're going to wind up the show with our assholes of the week. We talked about this becoming a regular feature, and it looks like that's what's going to end up happening.
Yeah, we should note that our first official is George Zimmerman last week, who wanted to auction off the gun that he shot Trayvon Martin with.
And he got about 100-something grand for it, by the way.
I was going to say, he didn't just want to. He actually did it, didn't he?
Yep.
Yeah,
he wanted to use that money to fight Black Lives Matter and Hillary Clinton. Other stupid things he wanted to do with it.
Yep.
Mm. Oh,
it just goes to show that there are a lot of stupid people with way too much money.
It also goes to show you that if you don't think Latinos can't be racist against black people, well...
Well, you've been living under Dan Stone then. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's just because I live in Chicagoland, so... No.
Yeah. But, okay, so... In the House of Representatives... Those of you who don't know, that's part of the legislative. We have the Congress and the House of Representatives in our great American democratic system. And there was this bill up going up to basically to make it illegal for contractors, government contractors, to discriminate against LGBT people, employees, that type of thing.
Because previous night, when it passed with the rider to allow that.
Yeah.
So they were trying to essentially get rid of that.
Yeah. And, well, what happened? Well, let's look at Think Progress and see what happened. A chaotic scene unfolded on the floor of the U.S. House on Thursday as a measure to ensure federal contractors can't discriminate against LGBT people was defeated by a single vote. It initially appeared that the measure, an amendment to the Military Construction Veterans Affairs and Related Agencies Bill that would have narrowed a quote-unquote religious liberty provision allowing federal
I love that term.
Yeah.
And somehow their religious rights are being frowned on because
they're gay
people walking
around. Yeah, we're
going
to talk about that a little later. But,
Well, they're peeing in the bathroom. Our religion's been frowned upon.
Yeah. This provision allowing federal contractors to discriminate against LGBT employees had enough support to pass that narrowing that particular provision. You know, in other words, trying to make it so that, you know, that was very narrow and that they didn't have such a big license to discriminate, you know, blah, 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 that type of stuff. Okay. Had enough support to pass, but... The Republican leaders persuaded a handful of members to switch from yay to nay, which resulted in the LGBT protection ultimately being defeated by one single vote.
Persuaded
yeah, there's
or
video
bullied?
Of this. Yeah, there's video of the whole thing.
And
see time going out, it's yays, but the gavel does not fall for it.
Nope.
Just let it sit there for a few minutes as people get bullied to flip.
Yep.
Every single Democratic person that was there said yay. There were 30-some that's Republicans said yay. 212 said nay. And mysteriously, that switched.
And,
7 people switched their votes.
And
last minute.
As far as American legislatural House of Representatives standards are concerned, all hell broke loose. Because immediately Democrats could be heard booing and chanting shame, shame, shame ding, 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 as 7 Republicans changed their votes.
Yeah, and those people have been identified.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Guess who's going to get a phone call?
7 people going to get very angry phone calls.
Very
somebody
angry.
Else's voicemail will be filled.
Yeah.
This is literally just... Here's the thing you have to understand. I want to point out. If you guys, any of you here who are not American are listening to this, you think, well, you guys, legislatures are yelling at each other. What's unusual about that? Because, you know, when you've got, you know, the parliament in UK or whatever, there's all kinds of yelling and shit.
Yeah.
That's just normal procedure. Every so often a fist fight breaks out, and that's about the end of it. But our legislators in the U.S. have created this false bubble of respectability around themselves. So that any kind of objection or anger is misconstrued as unrespectful and disrespecting the institution. So pretty much every legislature thing in the United States is boring as all hell.
Yeah. Because you turn on C-SPAN when you want to go to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
true.
But this one time, it turned basically into the British Parliament for a little while.
Yeah.
You really do not see shit like that happen here in the U.S.
No.
No.
And the author of the amendment literally called this literally snatched discrimination from the jaws of equality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pretty good way of putting it.
You know,
in the past day, House Republicans have gone out of their way to rig votes and block bills that prevent discrimination against LGBT people when they break their own rules. Their own rules to make sure taxpayer dollars can go to folks who can discriminate. They showed who they truly are, bigots and cowards.
Exactly. Yeah. And keep in mind, there was a bunch of Republicans who actually sided with passing this bill.
Yes, every Republican wants a theocracy.
No.
But some of those apparently got either convinced either by some backhanded deal or just by sheer intimidation.
Yeah.
Yeah, on Twitter, Sean Patrick Maloney, the author of the amendment, said, every single Republican who voted against my amendment should be ashamed of themselves. Your children will remember your hate.
So
it's amusing. The House Democratic leader, Nancy Pelosi, said House Republicans are so committed to discriminating against LGBT Americans that they broke regular order to force their members to reverse their votes and support Republicans' bigotry.
So here's a question. How much longer do you think it is before one of these dudes just ups and punches someone?
Hopefully not long.
Yeah.
Like, literally, one particular legislature is going to get up, is going to go across the aisle and just deck some person.
Yeah.
That's probably happening very soon.
Yeah, the amusing part of this article is Paul Ryan. He's talking about...
Paul Ryan, current Speaker of the House, by the way.
Yeah, he's pleading ignorance on this about the pressuring of people to change their votes. I don't know the answer. I don't even know. This is federalism. States should do this. The federal government shouldn't stick its nose in its business.
Yeah, that's the GOP's common.
Yeah.
This is about federal contractors of the government being discriminated against because federal.
Of course.
It's called punting.
Yeah,
and that's real rich supporting state rights coming from Wisconsin. They are in such freaking mess. It's horrible. I am dreading driving through that damn state for vacation because they cannot fix the road. I mean, they are so broke and so backwards. And
yeah, you think Kansas is bad?
There are no roads like Wisconsin. There can't be. I mean, unless you're like, you know, in Serbia or something.
Yeah, with Serbia, you have an excuse. There's explosives landing pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like in Wisconsin.
There's explosives and the occasional corpses of Bosnian children. So,
am I the only one who notices that whenever somebody gets on the war drums about states' rights, chances are it's about trying to choke out the 21st century?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's about good stuff like marijuana legalization.
Yeah.
Rarely,
they didn't really. They didn't really get on the states' rights war drum for that. They just kind of did it.
Yeah, that was just they put it up for vote, and it won.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And more or less, this federal government has tolerated it. Now, granted, there's still assholes about it.
Yeah, there's... Yeah. There is dissent there, but... by and large, there really hasn't been... Nobody's really made real waves about it.
Yeah. But the reason I brought up that question about what's going to happen when one of these dudes straight up gets up and decks the other guy is because that actually happened one time in our history many years ago. And it ended up being one of the precursors to the Civil War.
Mm. Yeah.
What? Who was it and what happened?
Yeah.
Find out next week on Brandon's Random Factoid. That one's
foreshadowing.
That's a tease, ladies and gentlemen.
I like it.
But just to sort of go ahead and tell you what the cause was, it was about slavery.
Of course it was.
Because it was a civil war.
Once again, about denying humans their rights.
Yeah.
Under the guise of states' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And stupid religion.
Yes. Speaking of states' rights, Oklahoma made a strong push for Asshole of the Week.
Yes, they didn't quite win it, but they get an honorable mention.
Ooh,
so
they got damn close.
Yeah, it was a late push. It was too late. They should have started earlier.
Yeah, but
they had a better chance if they did this on Wednesday instead of after these GOPs did it.
Yeah. So basically, the House of Representatives in Oklahoma. Oh no, wrong one. Okay, Oklahoma, state of Oklahoma. They enacted their own anti-LGBT law. It says religious students must get their own trans-free bathrooms.
That means what? Four bathrooms? Two that include transgender people and two for religious people. Religious bathrooms. You go pray and then do your thing.
Yeah. So this is from Slate.com.
Okay, wait a minute. If you're praying while you're taking a shit, you really need more fiber in your life.
These are kids getting out of school, too.
Okay. So
thinking time was a factor.
Yeah.
They do their Hail Marys and then do their business.
Yeah.
All right. So this is from Slate.com. Oklahoma legislators introduced a measure on Thursday that is at once vexingly bizarre and, well, wonderfully clarifying. The bill, which is SB 1619, would declare a state of emergency, and yes, that is a direct quote, in Oklahoma in response to the Obama administration's directive barring public schools from discriminating against trans students.
Might need to say that again. They declared a state of emergency.
A state of emergency. That is
obviously the sky is falling.
In response to the ability for transgender students to go to the bathroom with their chosen gender.
Yes. Yeah. I want to repeat that because state of emergency, that is literally written. That is not what Slate made up. That is not a whimsical notion of the author. That is literally written into the measure.
This is what they use when there's tornadoes destroying houses and areas.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not for people going to the bathroom.
Yeah. Now, as Slate further continues, been there, done that, you might think. But wait. The precise mechanism by which the bill legalizes anti-trans discrimination is unusually inventive. Rather than explicitly excluding trans students from school bathrooms, SB 169 grants non-trans students a right to use trans-free bathrooms. The reason? Non-trans students may have, say it with me, sincerely held religious beliefs that using the same bathroom as a trans person violates their religion, and accommodating those beliefs is necessary for the preservation of the public peace, health, and safety.
What part of the Bible is about transgender people? Isn't it usually about supporting everybody being nice to one another, regardless of...
Sorry?
No.
Oh, please. They don't actually read this stuff.
No. Listen to me. Listen real quick. You want to know the reason why I'm an atheist? It's because I read the whole damn Bible.
Damn right.
Which one?
It was the New International Version.
Or the Catholic Bible. There are different fucking books.
Yeah. Or the James Version, which my uncle is obsessed with.
And what does the Book of Mormon have to say on this?
Book of Mormon doesn't have anything to say about it, because the Book of Mormon is basically pure... Well, I was fixed to say pure fiction, but then again...
Oh, we got a good musical out of it.
That would be L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, yeah. Well, the Book of Mormon is basically Lord of the Rings in America.
It's biblical fan fiction.
Yeah, it's. I'm not making that up. The actual freaking book is like... There was this big, huge battles between these two factions, and one slaughtered all the others. The other got their skin turned darkened, and they are the ancestors of the modern Native American peoples. That's why their skin is red. But anyway,
let's skip that.
I'm so done with all this.
But anyway,
biblical fan fiction, really.
Yes. So, continuing, this curious bill is notable for two reasons. First, it states that religious students may not be accommodated with trans. Trans-fee single occupancy bathrooms. That means that this measure's proposed regime would require bathrooms segregated, not just on the basis of sex, but also on the basis of trans identity. Schools would really be required to have four bathrooms: men's, women's, trans men's, and trans women's.
Wait, Oklahoma can't maintain their own roads as well. How are they going to afford these other bathrooms?
Because this is a common thing with all of these, with all this shit. See, one of the things about a lot of these measures you'll find is that almost all of them take place in some Republican governed state that has a shit, you know, that's just in the shitter in general. And usually there's two reasons that these measures come up. One, because the people who create them is a genuine religious fanatic. Or two, they're trying to use it to distract people from the real problem.
Which is everything else going on these days.
So, okay, another thing. Second, this measure is a very explicit confirmation of the growing consensus that opposition to trans bathroom use is all about religion, not earnest terror over the entirely made-up bathroom predator myth. A statement by Republican Representative John Bennett, who authored a related resolution calling for Obama's impeachment. Oh, yeah, I forgot to mention that. Because the Obama administration recently released federal guidelines for public schools on how to deal with the trans people bathroom issue. This is related to that.
He's trying to be fair to people, so let's impeach him.
Yeah. He further brings this conclusion. Bennett described the directive as biblically wrong, throwing out the bathroom predator pretext and openly acknowledging the religious roots of his anti-trans animus. Bennett's resolution, along with his colleagues' absurd proposals, may be offensive and inane and discriminatory. No shit. But at least these lawmakers are conceding what so many anti-trans activists strive to keep secret. All this anger, all this loathing, all this cowardice, this pseudo-scientific argle-bargle, is about religion and very little else.
And all this anti-LGBT legislation has done is mean that people are getting harassed in the bathroom.
Yeah.
I put a link in the chat of a woman who was just doing her own business in the Walmart in Connecticut. And
We want to point this out. This is not a trans woman. This is an actual woman.
No, she just has short hair. Pixie haircut she has. And she's wearing a hat, she says. Mm-hmm. And she's just doing her thing, I think washing her hands, and a woman just walks up to her and just says, "You're disgusting," and walks off.
After flipping her off, too.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's like, because of this stuff, now these people that are bigoted have more reason to show that to other people. to be absolute jerks in the bathrooms.
Yeah, it's just going
without any need to have proof.
See, there's something I need to point out is that the reason this bullshit has come up, there's a very good reason. Now that same-sex marriage is now the law of the land, literally everything, all of these various little organizations, be it the American Family Association, Liberty Council, Family Research Council, all these groups who basically made their bread and butter off of, you know, trying to, off of fear of gay people.
They're pushing a message of existential threat because that's all they have left.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They found this one issue that still irks some people, and they're going to milk it for every dime they can.
Yeah, because these people seem to believe that transgender people are going to go into the bathrooms and fondle the children or sexually assault people.
Because I want to point this out, this was never an issue before.
Oh, they could have done this any time in the past, you know, 20, 30, 40 years that these people were doing their thing.
Yeah.
Bathroom.
Yeah.
But now, it's just...
Now it's a problem, because you thought about it for once.
Exactly. I want to emphasize this. There have always been trans people using the bathroom alongside you.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Since you were born, since the first time you used a bathroom by yourself, a public restroom, there was a trans person. There was probably trans people there with you. Mm-hmm. They have always been there.
Nothing's ever happened.
Nothing's ever happened. Yeah. You never even thought of it.
Yeah. I would just also like to point out that if you're looking that carefully, you probably should reevaluate your priorities.
Exactly. Yeah, you really should. And this is especially bad for people who are so far in their transition that they no longer look like their birth gender. There's photographs you can see on Facebook and everything of, you know, trans men being forced to still use the woman's restroom, even though they're, you know, got a full beard and a cowboy hat.
Yeah. So, thanks, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this came after the North Carolina bullshit.
Yeah, they got the whole backhanded slap from the government. They said, "Well, we're going to countersue you."
Yeah. And
saying, fuck you, we're going to go after.
As industry is basically falling over itself to leave that state.
Yeah.
Yeah, NBA is looking to take the All-Star game out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Various bands are saying, no, we're not going to go to this stop on our tour.
Springsteen, yeah. Maroon 5, I think Katy Perry.
PayPal is pretty much looking at getting out of there. That would be big.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't that because of some legislation Charlotte enacted?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
The state was like, yeah, we got to do something about Charlotte, one of our own cities. So we have no idea what's going on anymore.
Nope.
It's just all boogeyman stuff now.
Yeah, and it's literally because what you're seeing is the eventual downfall of the baby boomer regime.
Yeah.
Basically. And the more recent generations coming in, taking over, and the older generations are starting to have their previous privileges and prejudices challenged.
Yeah.
And so now they're basically doing everything they possibly can to have a death grip on them.
Hmm.
We just have to hope that they're children and children's children aren't taking after them.
Well, unlike the baby boomers, they have the internet.
Yeah.
That's
and that makes
an amazing
all the difference
countermeasure to insular discriminatory culture. It's not it's not taking root as quickly as I would like, but it is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It also helps that the more recent generations operate under the mindset of a world with internet. The older generations don't.
Yeah, like when we were kids, it was kind of more isolated.
Yeah.
So the internet became more of a thing in our lives. Realize there's a lot of people out there. They're not just in this country. You know, they're all over the world.
It used to be that, you know, the only way to get, like, major information in a relative quick way was either through, you know, through the press, through newspapers, you know, magazines, that type of thing, or, you know, TV news.
Encyclopedias.
Mm-hmm. But now with the internet, you've got all of this, not only all of this knowledge that you can access literally pretty easily if you know where to look, and you can also communicate with people on the other side of the world.
And we no longer have to think. Yeah. Everything's on the internet. We don't have to learn anything.
You just have to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, Google. That's it.
Yeah. It's probably about as good a place as any to end it for tonight.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
See, there's a reason why we put we've decided to put this asshole of the week stuff at the end. Because if we try and do this at the beginning of the show, we're just going to be wanting to punch something.
Yeah, well,
and wear ourselves out at the start of the show.
Of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Well, all right then. Well, we're going to wrap it up. So with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for, you know, Filippo Donalvo, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Sologi, and Teresa Sammons, we bid you adieu.